Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I've been calling it Wednesday all week. I can officially say today is indeed Wednesday. I am Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright.
You guys look nice this morning.
Thank you. So do you, good sir. We have a great show for you today. There is some finger pointing going on in New England after that shoddy offensive performance on Sunday.
Yep,
Aaron Rodgers might be without his biggest weapon against the Cowboys this weekend. And speaking of Cowboys, the blame game has begun. Let's dive in. Yes, Dallas sits in first place in the division, and sure, they boast an offense ranked third in the league in yards, and they did average over 30 points in their first three wins, but they are coming off a loss to the Saints where Dallas's offense looked stagnant, where Dak looked average, and where Zeke looked stalled. You can bet Jerry Jones put his attention towards first-year offensive coordinator Kellen Moore.
Hottest seat, the one that is more likely to have the most criticism is the offensive coordinator in the NFL. It's the hottest seat in the business. And boy, when that ball's when it doesn't work and you don't get the win, then get ready. They're going to be coming for you as a coordinator. So, Kellen knows this. His head coach knows it. I know it. That still doesn't mean now that you don't come in there and improve on how you got ready to play. So you're supposed to make adjustments when you don't get it done.
CC, things don't get much easier for the Cowboys. They host the Packers this weekend. So what do you think needs to change for them on offense after their poor showing in New Orleans?
Well, you get back to the basics. You don't overreact to what happened. Also, you realize that these guys are professionals. They're paid a lot of money to be able to stop your offense. And after going back looking at the game, I wonder how healthy Amari Cooper was, because he went and got an MRI during the week. Now, typically, you don't get an MRI unless there's really something serious going on with you, unless it's after a game. It wasn't after a game. It just happened to be midweek. They thought he needed an MRI. He got one. And in the game, you could see that he couldn't create separation. So if he's injured, I'm not going to overreact. I have to try to manipulate it to be able to get him off of press coverage, because he's going to get a lot of that this weekend in the Green Bay game. But it all starts with the running game. I want to try to protect that left side. Tyron Smith's not going to be in the lineup, which that running game is going to lead to play action pass. We got to take some shots down the field to be able to open up this defense, to be able to threaten them deep down the field. Now, since Michael Gallup, since he's been out, since week number one, he got injured week number two, their down the field passing game hadn't been as good. So that's something that I do want to look at, but I'm getting back to the basics. Zeke's going to carry the ball. He's going to carry it especially early and often to be able to get this offensive line back on track, playing at home, home crowd, going against a Green Bay defense that is 26th against the run and 18th in the red zone. So that's the way I'm going to attack it. I'm not going to overreact. I'm going to give the Saints some type of credit for being able to negate me, because the Saints did the same thing to the Cowboys last time they faced them.
Let's start with the running game, what you're talking about there. We saw Philadelphia somewhat salvage the first quarter of their season by running the ball down Green Bay's throat, by neutralizing what Green Bay had gone out in the offseason and acquired a pass rush. We saw Philadelphia have their most successful rushing day of the year in that critical game this past Thursday against Green Bay. Dallas must replicate that, because they're going to have a hard time throwing the football. Because I agree with you, Amari Cooper, you know how you know he couldn't get separation? Two offensive pass interference penalties on him in that game, pushing off to get that separation, because Dak Prescott was exceptional in week one and has been good, but not great since week one, coincidentally, since Michael Gallup's been out. It's got to be Zeke. The Dallas Cowboys, since Dak and Zeke have been together, are 1-8. If Zeke does not get 75 yards rushing, the one win was week one of this season against a Giants team that when Zeke was on a pitch count, so it's a little bit different. In games, they expect Zeke to be able to be a full go. If he does not give you elite-level production, they don't win. So, yes, it has to be Ezekiel Elliott in this game. They can worry about if all the accolades we were giving to Kellen Moore earlier in the season were a little premature later. They can worry about what new wrinkles this new offensive coordinator, the youngest in the league, needs to add a little bit later. What has to happen this weekend on Sunday afternoon is Zeke Elliott not only get the touches, but the production to go along with it because, and those of us who are still a little skeptical of Dak, what we know is when Zeke doesn't play well, the Cowboys don't win. That's why they made him the league's first $100 million running back. He's got to play well this Sunday.
Is there some concern for the fact that Dak's play has leveled off a bit over the course of the season each game? I think you gave us the numbers yesterday. They have been on a steady decline, even though it's just a little bit. Is that him? Is that the play calling? Is that production from Zeke? Where do you place that?
No, one is the competition. The competition they're facing is going to cause your numbers. You're not going to be able to get the Dolphins every week. You're not going to be able to get the rebuilding Washington every single week. To me, his passing, his skill set, he's duplicating, reading the coverages. He's sudden with the football. He's spreading the ball around. He's not forcing the ball anywhere. He's not making young mistakes with the football. No, I mean, if we sit here and watch every player and watch their numbers every week, we're going to be on a roller coaster ride, all right? He's made drastic improvements throwing the ball. Yes, there's doubters on every quarterback that we have in the league, even Tom Brady. I wouldn't say Dak's performance in week number 4 against the Saints would cause me to be alarmed. Not about his play, not about Kellen Moore's play calling. That was a good defense they were facing. Last year, were we saying the same thing after they basically played the same type of game, all right? Early in the season, it's just so easy to overreact. And younger players, when we haven't seen it, we don't give them the credibility that we've given the veteran players. But Dak has made drastic improvements as far as the passing game. I think that is there to stay. But if Amari Cooper is injured and Michael Gallup is out, that's his number one and number two target, all right? I believe with both of those things being true, he's functioned fairly well in the last 2 weeks.
And we probably did overreact a bit to week one. Week one, he has a perfect passer rating. He has 4 touchdowns. He's got 400 yards passing.
That's since the Miami game?
No. That's the New York Giants game. They went Giants, Washington, Miami, and then this past week against Philadelphia. Week one, he was exceptional. Since then, he's been good, not great. 98 rating, 5 touchdowns, 3 picks. But where, and you can see it right there, week one versus the rest of the season. Dak would take that second column extrapolated over the course of the season. So it's not like he's been bad. He would take a 98 passer rating, 7.5 yards per attempt, 70% completions the rest of the way, even if we just X out that first week. What he would not take and where he has to get better is in weeks 2, 3, and 4, third down. 14 of 23 on third down, a 65 passer rating on third down. Third downs is where Dak has struggled mightily after week one, where he was exceptional in all phases of it. Part of that is down and distance situations. Part of that is more difficult third downs they're facing. Part of that's play calling and the injuries, all of it. But that's the area that week one, he was perfect on third down. Weeks 2, 3, and 4, he struggled. And that's one of the reasons the offense in the first half, if we remember, first few drives in the game against Washington struggled. The entire first half against Miami struggled. And the entire game against Philadelphia struggled. They are going to need that offense to click against what I believe to be the best defense they faced yet this year in Green Bay on Sunday.
And if I was nitpicking as far as Kellen Moore, that's where Dak needs some help. They could be a little more creative on third down. Third down is the hardest down to be able to throw the ball. Typically, they can anticipate you throwing it. That right there, I could see as far as Jerry. You could see that he's a little bit young as far as that. So look for them to try to improve and be more creative on third down.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. Despite being undefeated, the Patriots need to figure out how to get their offense going. The one bright spot for Tom Brady was supposed to be all-pro wide receiver Josh Gordon. But Josh Gordon hasn't played like an all-pro yet this season. Pats offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels is taking the blame, saying, quote, I need to do a better job of finding ways to get him the ball. CC, how important is it for the Patriots to get Gordon more involved in this offense?
It's very important. They don't have any other options. But to me, I'm starting to see a little sign here. When Josh came back from a suspension this year, I don't know what kind of physical shape that he was in. It's not like other teams could get him. New England's very, very comfortable with him. But since he's been back, I haven't seen him have the explosion that I saw before. And how many times can you be suspended, be away from football, not practicing with the team, till you start losing some of your skill set? So for me with Josh Gordon, I'm wondering, how healthy is he? How much of his skill has he lost or has deteriorated because of the suspension? Because Demaryius Thomas, they highlighted him at the end of the preseason, like they were trying to use him. And then soon as AB, they get AB, you know what they do? They move AB in front of Josh Gordon as the number one receiver. So not only physically, I wonder where Josh is psychologically, because moving AB in front of him, remember the Miami game at the beginning of the game? They threw AB like three of the first four attempts. As a wide receiver now, that can be disturbing. When you've been working all offseason, you then got reinstated in the league, you've been going through training camp, and AB's been acting a fool somewhere else, and you're getting ready to reward him and move him in front of me? So this is something to watch. Like, we are not robots. We're humans. So Josh, this might be a great opportunity for him. But sometimes you forget about the opportunity and think about, personally, why aren't my numbers? He's got a lot of incentives. He's incentivized to be really good this year, and he's the only deep threat that they have.
Well, so for him personally and for the Patriots team-wise, it's so critically important that Josh Gordon have a big season, especially now that Antonio Brown is gone, now that their left tackle's on IR, their center's on IR, their fullback's on IR, and Sony Michel's not playing great. In fact, he's not even playing well. They need to have some type of threat to the defense. Mm-hmm. And maybe Edelman can get deep occasionally, but it's going to take him some time now. And what have we seen about Tom Brady this year? Nobody's getting the ball out quicker in the entire league than Tom Brady.
I got a better chance of getting deep this year than Edelman.
So your only real deep threats are Dorsett, who, by the way, is the second most productive receiver for the Patriots so far this year, which is a concern. And Josh Gordon. And Josh Gordon's the only one that can strike fear in the heart of the defense. If you want to open up some of the Pats' running game, then you would need someone that the defense has to account for over the top. And for Josh Gordon, I hate to bring up the money, but Josh Gordon's never been paid. Josh Gordon is still on a rookie contract. Josh Gordon is still making in the medium six figures, which, while is a great salary for a regular job, for an NFL guy that's been out of Baylor for 7 years, he can't even go out to the team dinners with the guys. Like, and so,
how do you think he felt when they gave AB
$9 million guaranteed?
Yeah, $15 million the first year, and gave him $20 million in the second year of that deal.
Triple what Josh Gordon has made in the entirety of his NFL career. So he's dealing with all these the demons he has, the personal struggles that we are all rooting for him on. And then from an ego perspective, there's the money and the stats. And from a production football perspective, there is, am I still Flash? Am I still the guy who had one of the greatest individual seasons we've ever seen in league history for the Browns with their quarterback situation? All those things are going on during a time the Patriots desperately need him. Maybe not this week against Washington, but over the course of the rest of the season.
But how much of this is on Josh Gordon to what I, for lack of a better term, play better? And how much is it on McDaniels to what call plays for him? I mean, if they suddenly throw a bunch of plays his way, do his numbers suddenly go up? Or is this more on Gordon?
No one utilizes their personnel better than New England. There is no player on New England's offense that would be more productive in another system. And that includes Edelman, that includes Brady, that includes them all. And right now, with them being absent of big plays and Brady just playing average football, this is on Josh Gordon. That's all they do. It's a football laboratory. You think they aren't designing plays all around the clock to try to figure out how to get these guys open? But no separation, no separation early. And Nick told you yesterday with Tom Brady, if you don't get open within 2.2 seconds, you can forget it, unless you're the turf, because that's where the ball's going to be headed.
Back here talking Eagles. Philadelphia picked up a big win in week four, putting them right back in the mix in the NFC East. And while Carson Wentz's numbers won't blow you away, the team's many drop passes, they're not doing Wentz any favors. Taking that into account, Pro Football Focus ranks Wentz as the top quarterback through 4 weeks of play. C, what are your impressions of Carson Wentz thus far this season?
I like where Carson is. I like that, because the thing I was worried about was the Andrew Luck concept. Is he going to keep just fighting, trying to stay in the pocket, trying to continue in the play, like compared to throwing the ball away, living the fight another day? And it seems like he's far more careful as far as trying to take care of his body and not trying to be as rugged. Like, he's a rugged quarterback. Like, he's been rugged in high school, college. He's a great athlete. And you don't want to take away all that creativity, but he's got to be able to take care of himself. This is the most important thing him in this year for him is his overall health. And with the lack of consistency with the wide receivers, you mentioned 7 drops week number 3, the big drop down the sideline for Nelson Aguilar in week number 2 against the Atlanta Falcons. It's hard for a quarterback to have continuity and to have faith that I'm going to do my job. I read the defense. I see the space where the ball should go and throw it in there with anticipation, knowing that whoever's going to come in there, they're going to catch it. So when you drop that many passes over a short period of time, every quarterback is holding the ball a little bit longer. So for me, based on the competition, what he's been against, down in situation, the first game I thought he started a little bit slow, but after that caught on fire, I think that he's played good football. He is on a track which I still think to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I'm very, very satisfied with his overall progress.
Listen, these are two separate questions. One is, has Carson Wentz been the best quarterback in the NFL this year? Obviously not. To my eye, he hadn't even been the best quarterback in his own division. Dak's been better through 4 weeks. In the NFC, you expand it past the NFC East, Russell Wilson's been better. And you expand it to the entire NFL, of course, Patrick Mahomes has been better than everyone, much less Carson Wentz, who this year you can say, while yes, Nelson Aguilar.
Well, help explain to us then why Pro Football Focus, because last week there was a lot of dispute. Brady was on the top of the chart.
So what they're
because right, they do a hell of a job as far as
evaluating.
I really
like Pro Football Focus, and I appreciate the way they evaluate players, and they do a wonderful job in helping guys, I will say, such as myself, understand which offensive linemen are really playing the best in the league. What guys who you don't have raw counting stats to account for are playing well. Mm-hmm. But there is something with the way they are grading quarterbacks that is going too far in the weeds and not enough of the obvious stuff. Like, I looked at it today. I looked at the data they had for their quarterbacks. And what is killing Mahomes is that he has 2 fumbles on the year that weren't even recovered by the defense. Now, you can argue, once you fumble the football, there is no, it's raw luck who gets it. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But even if you turn those 2 fumbles into turnovers, that would mean he has the same number of turnovers on the year as Carson Wentz, who had 2 interceptions in that Atlanta game. Mm-hmm. The one game of the year, despite the Nelson Aguilar drop, that you can say he played poorly in, that if he plays better, they come back and win that game. You just, sometimes, you and it's not, they don't do the eye test, they have a formula, and they punch in their numbers. Their formula needs to be adjusted. Like, people create stats all the time. John Hollinger, who used to work for ESPN, created such an important stat player efficiency rating. He got a job for 7 years with the Memphis Grizzlies in mm-hmm. their front office. Actually just left them to take a job with the Athletic. He created a stat. And when you punched in the historical data, you know what it said the top 3 players ever were? Jordan, LeBron, Wilt. And when you create a stat and it's like, oh, that actually passes the eye test. Shaq's in the top 10. You've got Oscar. So, okay, if you are creating a way to rank players and you say the quarterback who is number 1 in the NFL in rating touchdowns, yards per attempt, and hasn't turned the ball over is the 6th best quarterback in football, while the quarterback in Carson Wentz, who's 19th in rating, 17th in yards, 26th in yards per attempt, and has had a game that you can circle on the schedule against Atlanta that they would have won if he played better, has been the best quarterback, your formula's flawed. So that's that. Now, on Wentz, though, I do think he's played well. Mm-hmm. I do think his numbers don't do him full justice. Now, I'm not going to elevate him to the level that Pro Football Focus has, where they have been hurt terribly, is the lack of DeSean Jackson. Week one, they have two long passes, 20-plus yards in the air to DeSean Jackson that result in touchdowns. Since then, he's 2 of 12 with no touchdowns and both of his interceptions on those types of passes. They have not been able to connect on the deep pass down the field.
Which was a problem last year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Since D-Jack went out, that's where they need to get better. The reason they won the Green Bay game was they finally had an effective running game, took pressure off Wentz. He wasn't sacked for the first time all year. He was pressured the least all year. He was cleanest. He felt the best, I'm sure, physically coming out of that football game. That's the formula until they get their full complement of receivers back.
But the other place where the Eagles... And look, Wentz has been quietly off to a pretty good start. But the other place where they have some issues is starting games. They have trouble getting on the board. They have trouble getting out to an early lead, and then they can't hold it, and they find themselves playing catch-up. Why do you think that is? Because I think once he does that, maybe that instills a little more confidence.
Well, I think if you look at all the injuries they've had at wide receiver, they're trying to do running back by committee. So they got three guys they'd like to touch the ball as far as running backs. Wide receivers, they got four receivers and a tight end. Zach Ertz, who's a number one receiver. And they got a high draft pick in Dallas Goedert that ultimately he's got to play. So when you have guys miss time, Alshon Jeffrey is their chain mover. He's missed time. D-Jack on the outside, he's missed time. Zach Ertz has been the only constant in there. So you're throwing in new guys in there. Carson Wentz is working on himself. This is the biggest year of his career. He's trying to validate that first-round pick, trying to validate that second big contract. So he's going through a lot. And for three games, the offensive line was horrible. All right? So they weren't dominant at all. So I'm not as concerned. When you don't have that continuity early in the season, you could start to see it in the passing game. And, Nick, your numbers indicate, as far as their deep passing game, how it's fallen off since D-Jack's been out of the
But lineup. The biggest thing the Eagles need to improve on is while Carson Wentz is on the sideline. The reason that they have not been the team that a lot of people thought was the most talented team in football, they haven't looked like it, is because they have the 32nd-ranked pass defense in football. One of those reasons, yes, those corners get picked on all the time, but they have the fewest sacks of any team in football. If you have a questionable secondary and you're not creating pressure on the quarterback, teams are going to dice you up. That's what Green Bay was doing until Davante Adams went out of the football game. So for Philadelphia, big picture-wise, the offense is going to be fine. D-Jack will get back. I don't think Nelson Agholor is going to have another game with all those drops. Mm-hmm. I think Dallas Goedert's not going to have another game where he drops a gift-wrapped touchdown pass that couldn't have been handed to him any better. The defense is where, if Philadelphia is going to catch up with Dallas, eventually pass Dallas, the defense has to be better. Because right now, while Dak's not been a better quarterback than Wentz so far this year, what's more surprising, the Dallas defense has been better than the Philly defense this year. That can't sustain if Philly's going
to Now's the time in the show where you're supposed to give Howie Roseman that advice.
Okay.
Go out and get Jalen Ramsey.
That's it. You think that's what it is?
That's your Super Bowl pick.
No, I
Jalen
know
Ramsey,
that.
30 seconds.
I don't fully believe he's going to even leave Jacksonville. I thought he would have done it already.
With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, you will be eating stress-free this spring. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up all day long. Try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp. Restaurant-quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up, delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast and premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/firstthingsfirst50 and use code FIRSTTHINGSFIRST50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code FIRSTTHINGSFIRST50 at FactorMeals.com/FIRSTTHINGSFIRST50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor.
Look who's here, joined now by WWE superstar Charlotte Flair.
Welcome.
Hey, Charlotte.
Welcome.
Thank you. I got the ultimate blessing from Charlotte when Nick made a little smart aleck comment, and she goes, go ahead, just smack him. I mean, boy, would I love to sometimes.
I appreciate that.
Just thought I'd let you know. But she doesn't know the full flair of Nick Wright. All right, so Charlotte, great news. SmackDown returning to coming to Fox this Friday. The excitement, the festivities, everything leading up to it has been incredible. Yes. You can see everywhere you've been. Tell me a little bit about what the lead-up has been like for you from the inside with everybody.
So the anticipation, I've talked about it all summer, how WWE is moving to Fox. But for me, it's the perfect partnership, entertainment and sports. And in my opinion, no one does sports and entertainment better than WWE. And then myself talking about the women's evolution and bringing that to Friday nights and the change that we've made in the company, hoping that that transitions to different industries. It's so exciting, and I am honored to be here.
All right, so during the 20th anniversary celebration on Fox, you and Becky Lynch are teaming up against Bayley and Sasha Banks.
I mean, if we can get along.
Right. Well, so that is going to be the question. So
no.
I think you guys, if we were going to put odds on it, you guys would be the favorites. If you can get along, do you think you and the wrestler known as The Man are going to be able to do it? How do you see that going?
100%. But what's so cool about Friday is the four of us started together, and to know that over the last 6 years, we've built this incredible legacy for the women, with all the women from the past and the present, and we're debuting on Fox. It's huge.
So this summer, you made history. You headlined the first ever main event at WrestleMania. We talked about, because we've had a couple of the headliners in WWE there.
Yes.
We've talked about the evolution of women. What do you think about your role? Because I grew up with your dad being one of my heroes. I mean, he was
Charlotte's dad? Yeah, no,
Charlotte's
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Yeah, I mess with him all the time.
No, and the thing about it is, my son, he's a professional football player. Yeah. My daughter, she works in pro sports. So I do understand. But what do you personally feel as far as this women's division being created and you being a huge part of that?
So I think for me, when I first started, the biggest message was I was known for my talent. I wasn't known for my looks. I was known for my size, my athleticism, what I could do in the ring. And when you watched me, you weren't watching a woman, it was a male or female. And that to me is what made me stand out in the beginning was I'm the best athlete in WWE.
Well, that's what I was, to jump in real quick, you were watching a great athlete. And that was, we talked to Stephanie McMahon about this, is the rebranding, removing the Divas title, removing, because there was at one point in time, there was an unquestioned sexual component to the way they presented female wrestlers.
Well, we're secondary storylines.
Right. It was all
eye candy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now you guys headline main events, you do backflips off the top turnbuckle, and I'll say this, you said Charlotte's dad. Listen, Ric Flair is one of the all-time greats. You're a much better athlete than your dad ever was. Your dad's come on.
My dad's the best, but don't get me wrong. But it's the fact that the women were given an opportunity, and we took that opportunity, and we over-delivered time and time again, and because of the audience, the company listened, so they gave us, you know, that chance. But, you know, the women now just want to go, we're just not divas, we're superstars. And there was nothing wrong to me with being a diva, because I was like, okay, I can be this, you know, athlete, strong, confident woman and be a diva. But it was just more, okay, hey, we're putting more focus on the women, so they rebranded the title.
Mm-hmm.
And when I won that title at WrestleMania 32, I've never felt more accomplished in my entire life, because it was a message to everyone saying, no, the women can main event, the women can take over, and the women can run this company that's a male-dominated world, and it's not male-dominated
anymore. Do you feel a personal responsibility because your athleticism, because with this big event, as far as how many young ladies out there will get an opportunity after seeing you?
Absolutely. It's just more saying that you can do anything you set your mind to, and the ones who have the, when I used to say I'm going to main event WrestleMania, people would say you're crazy. Like, I'm crazy. Oh, no, you're fooling yourself. I'm not fooling myself. No, I'm going to main event WrestleMania. So the message is the ones who have these dreams that people are scared to say, or they're like, oh, I'm a little embarrassed to say that, are the ones that make these incredible opportunities happen.
Why do you think, Charlotte, WWE is such a broad appeal, that there's this new generation of fans that are now coming on board and they find that it's so relatable? Why do you think that is?
It's family friendly, and our most important role is to put smiles on people's faces. And when you come to the show, there is something for everyone. For the grandmother that's 77, for the child that's 7 years old. I mean, it's just all entertainment plus sports. And what makes us so special moving to Fox is we control the cliffhanger. We control that last touchdown. We control, you know, whether that team's winning or that team's losing, and whether we're going to make you happy or sad. And that's, I don't know, that's what we do best.
Well, after the 20th anniversary edition this Friday, the following Friday, there's a draft. And I'm rooting for you to get drafted by the SmackDown side. I know either side's great. Yeah. You'd be happy either one. But we hope Fox gets you on the SmackDown side.
Fingers crossed.
Charlotte, thank you so much. Much
thank
appreciated.
You.
We'll
thank
be watching
you.
SmackDown Friday night on Fox. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.